Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
To begin today, a hypothetical question, but think about it. If something was wrong with you medically and you didn't know what it was, who would you trust more to diagnose the MRI? A human doctor or an artificial intelligence program? If you want the AI, okay. If you don't, would it help if I told you that the human doctor might have seen a few hundred MRIs like yours in her career, but the robot has access to tens of thousands of similar images? Does that change your mind? What if I told you that the kind of misdiagnoses that happen because one doctor reads an image differently from another are startlingly common? Now, do you want the AI? And if not, honestly, why? And that's not an accusation, because I feel the same way. Or at least I did. And now, while I might not be ready for a full-on robot doctor, I really do hope that I have one looking over my human doctor's shoulder if there's ever something unusual going on. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Dr. Hamid Tizouche is the director of the Kimia Lab at the University of Waterloo, which is teaming up with Toronto's University Health Network and the Vector Institute, and they're developing software that can read and provide feedback on medical images like x-rays and ultrasounds. Dr. Tizouche, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
So can you start, for those of us who aren't extremely well-educated, explaining what problem is the AI imaging work trying to solve?
Well, many research groups across the planet are working on how to use artificial intelligence to address challenges in medical imaging. Medical imaging is a huge field. We have X-rays and CTs and MRI and ultrasound and some other modalities, that some other imaging types that we use to diagnose different type of diseases and conditions. And there are many challenges, mainly for diagnostic purposes and for research purposes. And research groups are working to address some of those challenges, but predominantly the goal is, the target is to help to establish a better, more accurate diagnosis for different conditions, again, predominantly cancer, for obvious reasons.
Give me an example of what kinds of problems currently exist in, like, the diagnostic procedure for these images.
Well, the main problem in from medical imaging perspective in the diagnosis is what experts call the variability. They call it observer variability, and then they distinguish between inter and intra observer variability. That's a fancy phrase for saying that doctors do not agree with each other. If you ask two radiologists or three pathologists to look at one image and tell you their diagnosis, you may hear different things. So in this discrepancy, this disagreement can be up to 50-60%, so which is
really,
of course, which is very scary. So then people cannot agree with each other. And the literature reports a large number of clinical studies that reports, we experiment with 10 radiologists or 10 pathologists, whatever the number is, and we looked at this type of condition, that type of cancer, and we look at this many patients, and we found 10%, 20%, 30% disagreement among the experts. So diagnosis by looking at images is not an easy task, so we have disagreements, which is, from patient's perspective, error. So doctors make error. Even the best doctors make error, because the nature of the problem is very challenging. by just looking at the image and saying what it is. So that's the main problem of diagnosis from a medical imaging perspective.
What can artificial intelligence do to kind of smooth out that process or improve it?
It seems the mainstream artificial intelligence is following probably two main methods to address this issue. The absolute majority of researchers are trying to train artificial intelligence techniques or agents, which is a piece of software, basically, to make the diagnosis directly. So you train a software to look at the prostate images and say, this is prostate adenocarcinoma. You train a network, an artificial network, to look at breast images and say, this is invasive ductal carcinoma, and so on and so on. So in that sense, artificial intelligence is supposed to make a decision and say, this is this, make the diagnosis. This is one approach which many experts, mainly from pathology side but also from radiology side, are a bit worried about that this may replace them, because if the computers are so smart that can make the decision, so where is the spot for the radiologist or pathologist? So, and the other approach is to not make the decision but also just provide assistance through the process of diagnosis by finding similar cases. So that's the approach that we follow in our lab at Chemio Lab. We try, when the pathologist or radiologist is looking at a specific image and he or she is trying to make a diagnosis, we will go inside the archive of all medical images of that hospital. Patients who have already been evidently diagnosed, they have been treated. We even know the outcome for those patients. We find similar images, similar in terms of anatomy, pathology, texture, color, if you like, sometimes. So we find similar images, and we bring them back, those images, and those images come with a lot of information because those images are for the patients who have been already diagnosed. So we call this a virtual peer review. And so it's as if you are showing an image to three of your colleagues and say, what do you think? What is that? If we could do that in the practice, we could probably eliminate the diagnostic error. If in any hospital we could bring in three radiologists or three pathologists to look at the images of the same patient, discuss it, and remove the uncertainty, most likely we could go to 100% accuracy. But no healthcare system on the planet can afford that, to have a group of highly paid specialists. We don't have enough of them. We don't have enough radiologists. We don't have enough pathologists. The education is taking a long time, and young people may not be just willing to go study pathologists at the numbers that we like them to do that. So these are the main two approaches that we have. Either you use artificial intelligence to make direct decisions, which is scary, frightening for many clinical experts, or we use artificial intelligence as an assistant, as a smart assistant, and we still give the decision-making, put the clinical expert, the doctor, the physician in the center and say, you steer all the boss, you call the shots.
I will ask you about kind of the first scenario you described a little later, but first I want to talk about the work that you're doing on the second one. What kind of scale do you have to achieve, and how difficult is it? Like, I'm a lay person. Are you simply feeding all of these files from the hospital for as long as you've been doing imaging into the computer and letting it sort of sort it out and learn from it? Like, what needs to be done to get there?
Yeah. So we can distinguish roughly, very closely, between among two different scenarios. One is we are dealing with conditions that are very common. Lung cancer is common. So breast cancer is common. Prostate cancer is common. We have many, many, many patients. We have many, many images, many, many reports. Many people have been treated. We know the outcome. We know what radiation therapy response, what surgical therapy response. So these are common cases. that for which we have a huge number of cases in any hospital that you go. So for this type of cases, our preliminary studies show that if we have per diagnosis, roughly around 3,000, 4,000 patients in the archive, actually the computer can come up with really reliable good guess for the diagnosis. But we have also rare cases. We have difficult cases. And for rare and difficult cases, you don't have many patients. So if I for lung cancer, I may have 10,000 patients, but for Hodgkin lymphoma, I may not have many. For sarcoma, I may not. For specific type of sarcoma, I may not have many patients in my hospital. There may be 200 in total. So you have to treat the rare cases differently. At the moment, we are entirely focused on common cases because this is the big chunk of work, and this is the right work that will delay the diagnosis for everybody else, among others, also for rare cases. So if you have really a rough number, so usually in scientific research we are hesitant to provide the numbers, but roughly per diagnosis, if you have 3,000 to 4,000 representative patients in archive, the computer should be able to do a good job with coming up with a reliable diagnosis.
How far away are we from this being used in hospitals around Canada?
There are some cases that we will be in hospitals next year. University Health Network is has been pioneering peer review in terms of increasing the quality control and quality assurance of diagnosis by letting radiologists check each other. And if there is discrepancy, then they talk about it. And we will add an artificial intelligence component to that next year for specific diagnosis, which is pneumothorax, the collapse of lungs. And if we will deploy that, we will gather information, how radiologists would embrace it, how do they use it, what is the feedback, what are the good things, what are the bad things. And then hopefully our intention is to expand to at least 14 other conditions for the chest X-ray, which is a large part of medical images. Mm-hmm. And then we take it from there. So that's the radiology side. For pathology side, again, early next year, we have commercialized some of the things that we have found at the lab, and a Ontario-based company will be commercializing that and bringing it, at least for research purposes, early next year to the pathology labs.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
What's been some of the reaction from radiologists and pathologists to the early testing?
Well, when you talk about what artificial intelligence can do with digital images, you usually don't hear any resistance. And people are smart. They start asking questions. What is this? What is that? And they try to find out the scope of the technology. And most of the time, so I have to distinguish between radiology and pathology. Radiology has been digital since almost 20 years, probably a little bit more. Pathology is about to go digital. In pathology, we are still using microscopes, not computers, basically. So it's a bit different. In radiology, there seems to be more willingness to use an experiment with artificial intelligence because things are digital anyway. So if I go to the archive of Sunnybrook, you find millions and millions of radiology images, but not many pathology images. But generally, people have questions. Generally, this is not an app that people can download and use. This is a highly sophisticated technology. Physicians want to understand how the technology works. They ask specific questions. They want to use it. They want to validate it. And at the moment, you see that mainly from the young generation. that is always willing, the visionaries, the pioneers that want to try new technologies. And the older generation is, of course, naturally more skeptical, and they may not also be willing to really adopt such disruptive technology. But there is no question that we will have artificial intelligence in different capacities in hospitals within the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, that kind of leads me to loop back around to the first scenario you described, because as the work that you're doing gets better and better and becomes more accepted, is there a chance that this work could sort of graduate from being the second opinion to being the first opinion, which is then reviewed by a human?
If you had asked me this question 4 years ago, I would have said no. But the breakthroughs that have been achieved in artificial intelligence in the past 10 years and have been refined in a very rapid way during the past 5-6 years, we have really a historic opportunity to eliminate diagnostic error. It's really tangible. It's really, the technology is real. It is there. The people who are working on them, they're serious people who want to change things. There's one thing missing that prevents, besides that, let's say there are some clinical experts that may still have doubts, but from technological perspective, the only thing that is preventing us is the access to the data. So there is no large-scale access to medical images for obvious reasons, patient sensitivity, right. Patient privacy. There is no large access, and AI is a technology that lives and thrives on data. If there is no data, if there is no images, there is no AI. So this is the only thing that prevents us. But otherwise, I can definitely see that at the moment, we are still, for example, we take the biopsy sample, we process it, then we give it to the pathologist. The pathologist puts it under the microscope, a technology that is 400 years old. And the pathologist look at it. If it is obvious and common, he or she knows what it is, and then he writes a report. If it's difficult, he will look at some atlases, some books. He tries to find similar images. And if it cannot resolve that, they may send it to another hospital and say to another expert and say, what do you think? Ask for a second opinion, which is, of course, it takes some time. Cost money. Mm-hmm. That's why most many patients, the average time for diagnosis is 4 to 6 weeks. So it's completely conceivable. It's very realistic that in 4 or 5 years, we have machines that you put the biopsy sample in, and from the other side, the complete pathology report comes out. This is conceivable. It is possible. But how can we make that happen if we have access in an organized way to high-quality medical images, which at the moment is not possible? So at the moment, it takes research groups many months to go through ethical review process and get access to a really small set of data to make some development. If we have access to large archives, historically we are at a position that we could help to eliminate diagnostic error. But I don't see it by excluding the human expert from the loop. We still need the human expert in the loop for the time being.
Well, that is what I was going to bring up, because I kind of wanted to ask you a philosophical question, which is, if this technology gets good enough, and it obviously would save us millions of dollars in doctors' time, but would people ever be able to come to accept a diagnosis straight from the machine? You know, I get the idea that, you know, an algorithm can give me like a credit score or something that's just very impersonal. But like to think about an AI machine telling me that, you know, maybe I have cancer kind of crosses a line for me. And maybe that's just me.
Sure. Well, the question is this: for us as patient, all of us are also patient at the same time. For us as a patient, the question is this: do you want to be diagnosed based on the knowledge of one doctor? Or you want to be diagnosed based on the knowledge of 10 doctors, or you want to be diagnosed based on the knowledge of 100 doctors. So if we need to educate the public, there is no question about that. As somebody from the computer science and AI community, we have to go out also educate the clinicians how the technology works. We have to take the fear away. So if we do our homework and we extract, we assemble large archives of medical images and we answer the questions of patient privacy, which is the concern for all of us, and we can train on those large archives. I'm talking about millions of images, millions and millions of patients. Then basically we are, by using artificial intelligence, you are relying on the knowledge of hundreds and hundreds of experts. So if you have that technology, myself as a patient, also being always a skeptical to using technology in medical domain, if they are not fully and thoroughly validated, I would love to be rather diagnosed by a computer if I know what technology is being used. So I think education is a big part of adopting the technology. We cannot do this. We have to take the fear of the public and the physicians away from AI.
Dr. Tizush, thank you so much for explaining this for us.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
That was Dr. Hamid Tizush, the director of the Kimia Lab at the University of Waterloo. That was also the Big Story Podcast. If you'd like more, head to our website, thebigstorypodcast.ca, or find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. As you probably know by now, we are on all your favorite podcast players, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify, at least 65 others, and shout out to the one person who listened to us on a Zoom. Claire Brassard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Stephanie Phillips and Ryan Clark are our associate producers. Annalisa Nielsen is our digital editor. And I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Have a great weekend. Stay healthy. We'll talk Monday.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.